Welcome to the Shark Brains podcast. My name is Roel Kral and I'm one of the co-developers of WireShark. In this podcast, we will discuss all things about WireShark as well as topics from the world of packet analysis and SharkFest, which is our packet analysis and developer conference. You will meet interesting people and learn why the truth is always in the packets. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Shark Bites Podcast. This time around, we're going to have a very special episode talking with Gerald Combs, founder of the WireShark project, about a new entity that was just created and founded, which will hopefully, or at least that's what we very strongly aim for, help us develop and take this project further, even further than it has been so far. So without further ado, hi, Gerald.
Hello.
Let's talk about the WireShark Foundation. What did we do there?
We entails not only myself, but Angela, who's on this call, Sherry Najafi, who's the executive director of the foundation, the WireShark core developers. We have legal support, not only from our own nonprofit attorney, but my current employer's attorney. They're VP of Legal. We all kind of got together and helped to set up what's in the U.S. called a 501c3, and that number refers to a part of the U.S. tax code that says, okay, we're incorporated under this portion of the U.S. tax code, which lets us accept donations, but it also means that we, you know, have a specific focus, and that the focus is constitutes a community good, meaning that we benefit the public. And the particular focus of the foundation is that, you know, we want to teach people about low-level networking, and we do that through education, through things like SharkFest, and partnering up with educators, you know, people who teach protocol analysis and low-level networking. And we also support open source. In particular, right now, we support the WireShark project. I mean, that's, yeah, where all the name comes from, and that's kind of the project that everything kind of derives from and is clustered around.
How long did we, I mean, I know that we started talking about founding this, creating this foundation quite some time now. What was the motivation for you behind going independent from a corporate sponsor?
My particular motivation was just comes down to the fact that up until now, a lot of the workings of the project just depended on me individually. And if I ever couldn't, you know, fulfill those roles and those responsibilities, then, you know, the project, I don't think it would stop, but the, you know, there might be an issue with the project and some difficulties in keeping the project running. And you know, by transferring this over to an independent foundation, we actually remove a couple of single points of failure. You know, one is me, which I just described, and the other is we only had a single main sponsor of the project, and in the past was always my employer, whether you're, right now it's Sysdig. Prior to that, it was Riverbed, and then Case Technologies, and so on and so on. Another question is why we're doing this now. We just find that everything just kind of aligned. You know, getting this up and running had to be done at a certain time of the year. We have times of the year when the project is really busy with things like SharkFest and other things. And trying to do something that changed the ownership, the project trademarks, would have been problematic. Like, you know, right in the middle of a SharkFest, we couldn't do that. And so we had to wait until, you know, there was downtime between conferences and until other things lined up. And you know, this year we finally got everything in place and we were able to spin up the foundation and so we've done that. And one of the reasons it's kind of taken so long is because, you know, we've had such wonderful sponsors in the past. The fact that we've, you know, had this wonderful sponsorship has let us be lazy and take our time. This has taken a lot longer than I think anybody expected, but everybody seems to be happy that it's happened now. And we've been able to, you know, do this properly and get it up and running and get everything in place correctly.
I mean, I remember the first time we talked about it with the core developers, I think was 2017 in Estoril.
Yeah.
Where we just came together and the initial motivation, or at least the talks we had from a core developer side of things, was initially the bus problem. So a lot of open source projects, from a purely technical perspective, from a lot of open source projects, they live and die with a single person who drives the project, who is the main invested person, who is the main contributor and stuff like that. And if this person, for whatever reason, let's hope, good reasons, but there are also bad reasons in life, obviously, steps away from the project or is no longer able to contribute, then it has happened in the past that those projects simply vanish. With Wireshark, we, at least that was my initial estimation, what the feeling was within the group. I don't think this would have happened, but the problem was, and this was our main concern, to prevent another ethereal Wireshark scenario with the trademarks not being owned by us. So yeah, this was one of our main motivations.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, this does give the project a lot more self-determination. You know, we've had such great and supportive sponsors in the past that really hasn't been an issue, but you know, it's always something that's kind of in the back of your head. You know, what happens if, you know, untoward happens, something really bad happens, and whoever controls the trademark doesn't have the project's best interests at heart. It kind of solves that. But as I said, the sponsors we've had in the past, that hasn't been an issue, and I couldn't foresee it ever being an issue, but like you said, it's you know, it has happened to other projects.
I totally agree. And another issue with that, or another point with that, actually has been made last week fabulously for us by Docker, who started to charge money for pretty much essential stuff to use the whole thing. And they are completely in their rights to do that. I'm not criticizing them to do that. But the problem is, at the same time, there are a lot of projects that are building upon Docker as their main interface, and now they are no longer able to do that. From an open source perspective, obviously going independent is the right choice. But as you said, one of the benefits we had in the past was always very strong sponsorship.
Yeah,
we always had one main sponsor, one main corporate sponsor backing us, and a lot of individual sponsors who contributed to SharkFest, contributed to the project or the website. That was really lucky, to be quite fair.
Yeah, that actually describes two problems. One, there's a single point of failure with sponsorship. I know I keep repeating myself, but it wasn't a problem because, you know, my employers were always happy to fund the project. But again, there's just the single entity that we had to depend on. The other problem there was that when people did want to donate to the project, I didn't have a good answer. You know, I would occasionally be approached by people who say, well, you know, I'd like to donate some amount of money to the project. And what do you do? I mean, yeah, one of the ways we looked at was maybe opening a contract with a professional services team on, you know, with my employer, and then somehow transferring that into the project. And it just didn't work well. Whereas right now with the foundation, there's a direct path to donation. And if you donate in the US, it's tax deductible. So yeah, it works in a very standard way, and in a way that, you know, a lot of other places use. And so far it's working fairly well.
And also, we can now support some other long-standing requests by the community. We can sell stuff. You can buy t-shirts, you can buy sweaters, you can buy cups. And it's also all the proceeds go directly into the project. I mean, people tend to forget, yes, Wireshark is this entity. And if you are in IT, a lot of talks and companies actually know the product. But what is kind of overlooked there is that it's also a very... It's big to host such a project. We have over 1 million downloads per month on our main servers. And so we have quite an extensive cost sheet to just hosting the platform.
We do. The phrase I always fall back on is stuff costs money, although half the time I don't use the word stuff. I use a different word. But we do have expenses. If your project size and needs are below a certain threshold, you can just throw everything on GitHub or GitLab, and everything's fine. And those two organizations provide an invaluable service to the planet by hosting all these open source projects. But you know, once you hit a certain threshold, you have to go beyond that, and you get into this area where you have to start paying people just for stuff, for infrastructure, for just to keep your project going. And you know, we do have infrastructure costs, and you know, the foundation was set up in part to help pay for those costs.
Yeah, not only infrastructure, but also people. We do have our conference, SharkFest, which we host twice a year. This year we have three. So if you have nothing to do in, I think, 3 weeks' time, you can fly to Singapore, where we have our SharkFest Asia conference. In June, we have our US conference. And in autumn, winter, we're going to have our European one again. And those organizations for those conferences not only cost money, they do, But you also need a dedicated person to do that.
Yes.
And this is where Sherry comes in. I don't know what's her official title now. Is CEO or director? Or
she's the CEO of the foundation and the executive director. Yes, she runs the foundation, does a great job. And that kind of goes into the question of why we did it this way versus joining an umbrella organization or you know, some other pathway to the foundation. And as you recall, Roland, because you were in and on these discussions, we initially looked at joining a couple of umbrella organizations. It looked very promising early on, but the more we kind of talked to people and the more we looked into it, the more it became apparent that the way the umbrella organizations were talking to, the way they had everything set up kind of didn't really match what we were doing. And in one case, you know, they had their own conference team, which would mean that we would have had to abandon Sherry and abandon SharkVest essentially and go with their, you know, the way they ran conferences. We kind of just finally ended up saying, fine, we're going to have to do this ourselves and have our own organization and our own governance, just because, you know, we already have this business model in place. We have this business model of SharkVest, which is doing great. We have this person running it who's doing a fantastic job. So, you know, we just kind of built the governance to match that existing business model. And, you know, that was just one of the things that had taken consideration when we were setting this up.
That's another thing that we had to consider is that we are, as a community, we are very uniquely structured. We are an open source project with every sense of the word, obviously, but we also, our conference is not a typical IT conference. We are not striving for getting as many people as we can there, but we always kept the number of attendees. We want to have it as a small get together of packet capture enthusiasts talking about stuff. And also a network with a lot of the same people showing up. We have a lot of repeated offenders, as we call them, showing up to many conferences consecutively. So this doesn't go well with big organizations where obviously the conferences are the big money goats where the money comes in. And that only works if you have a lot of people on staff, if you have a lot of people attending. And that's just not our forte. It's not our style.
Yeah. A lesson that I keep learning over and over again with this project is that tone is important, and it's specifically setting the right tone. And SharkVest was originally started by a woman named Janice Papanato. She did a great job in setting the tone of the conference. It's very familial. It's very welcoming. But at the same time, it's not huge. It's more intimate, for lack of a better word. And I like it that way. And I think the attendees in general do, because you have a chance to talk and share with people. It's not like RSA or DEF CON or whatever, where you spend half your time just walking around from place to place, you know, seeing all these vendors whiz past if you're walking through the vendor floor, for instance. One of the quotes I love about the conference from one of our speakers is he said that it was the only conference they'd ever been to where the speakers go see each other's talks. Yeah, we just try to have that level of quality in the conference, so that you always have something valuable to take away, whether it's, you know, from another speaker's session or just from talking to another attendee. One of the things I stress at SharkVest is that everybody there has something valuable to share. You know, so I try to get people talking to each other, and that's just kind of the tone of the project and of the conference.
I think this is also one of the main motivations for us core developers. We have a very active circle of community members who contribute to the project, not only core developers, but also non-core developers. We have a lot of people who interact and engage on Discord and on the mailing list. And we are not distant. We are engaging. If you want to ask us questions, the chance is one of the core developers is answering. And most likely the guy who wrote that, or we forward the question to the guy who wrote that.
Yeah.
And so I think this is
one of
the great...
Sometimes that guy's name is Guy.
Sometimes that guy's name is Guy, yeah. But yeah, it's one of the big things that we have. And this is also, I think, the appeal for many people with the community we created and still try to achieve every day. And as you said, one of the beneficial factors we have is we are wired differently when it's communicating with each other and with the community. And I would say we really, really rarely shoot down an idea. Most of the time we try to encourage ideas, but maybe steer them a little bit in a different direction if we think this would suit the project better. I can't remember that there were that many things that we actually flat out said, no, we won't do it.
Yeah, that's pretty rare.
Yeah.
I mean, it does happen sometimes.
Obviously, there is always something which, for whatever reason, we think it's not fitting. But at the same time, you can talk to us. We are engaging. We try to help. We try to steer in the right direction. And this is also what the project is going to set up like, right? The foundation. So on the one side, we have the organizational stuff, the management stuff. We also have the board of directors, which main focus is promotion of the foundation and acquiring sponsorships. And the second part is the technical advisory committee. Can you lead us through what that will be and entail?
The technical advisor committee follows a model that's actually pretty common, especially in umbrella organizations, because with an umbrella model, you have this main organization that hosts a bunch of sub projects, and they might even be set up as separate business entities sometimes, depending on that's one of the, I think that's how the Linux Foundation does it and how other foundations do it as well. Basically, the advisor committee focuses on a specific portion of or a specific project, usually in this case it'll be Wireshark, and this will be another kind of step in self-determination for the project, because this will let the core developers and anybody else on the advisor committee say, this is how we would like resources for the project to be allocated and used. And if we need something that, say, required a formal request, I don't have any idea what that might be right now, but but if that ever happened, we could set up some sort of formal communication channel between the foundation and the project. Luckily, right now, we're still very small and very informal, so we just shoot emails to each other and things like that.
I don't think this will change anytime soon.
Nah.
One of the best things about this whole thing is that we make the process more open, I think, is the right thing. We always were democratic in the back. In the past, this happened behind the curtain with the internal communication channels of the core developer group. And now we have a chance to open it up. So the technical steering committee, I think, is it called, or technical advisor.
Well, yeah, we started out calling it an advisor committee, but it's more probably properly named a technical steering committee. I think that's the more standard name.
Yeah. So one of the things we're gonna have is we're gonna have elections. So who is on that board will be a choice of the community. We will elect members to this board. People will have the chance to participate in this process. We still not sure how big or how we create this. We are in the process of figuring the technical sides of things, but this is going to be set up. And also one thing we can do with the steering committee, which we actually kind of like, is up until now, the main role you could have in Wireshark is being a core developer, which entails that you developed stuff, but we have a lot of participants in our community who not necessarily have committed code, but contributed huge amount of time to us and huge amount of value, which we were not able to call out by name, except by the person's name, obviously, but we couldn't give a certain role to that. And this is all something we want to try and create a some kind of core supporter role or core whatever, but we just want to open up this group and be more inclusive to other kind of contributions than just code development. Final question: what do you think will this mean for the project? I mean, Wireshark is gonna turn 25 this year.
It's this year. On July 14th.
So we're gonna turn 25. Let's say at least another 25 years.
It wouldn't surprise me, but boy, that seems like a big task to get that far.
Well, if you look back, would you have thought you were going to make it 25 years?
I had no idea that everything was going to unfold this way. And this is, so far, it's been the career of a lifetime, and I plan on doing this as long as I can, I don't know what to say beyond that. You did mention early on, and when we started talking about what happens if I needed to step down, and that actually happened early on in the project. After a couple of months, I released, it was Ethereal back then, but I released it to the public, and people started contributing a few months later, my wife and I bought a house, and we needed to remodel it. And so I focused on that instead and just dropped the project. And eventually one of the contributors eventually became a core developer, but he tracked down my phone number, gave me a call one day and asked, you know, if I was going to continue working on this. And that was a big wake up call. At that point, I realized that I didn't need to support this. This is an important thing that people use. So, kind of driven my focus since then.
As much as I like the story, but we have to emphasize the fact that this was 1998 and there were different times back then, and tracking somebody down by phone was accepted.
Yes, please don't stalk me.
Now you probably would have some harassment lawsuit on your hands if you do the same thing. But yeah, I feel the same way. And it's always kind of surprising. I was going through a job redefinition last year, and I had a few interviews. And pretty much in every interview I did with an IT department, Wireshark was a big part of the conversation. And it's always fascinating to me that it's kind of a universal project. The number of people and the number of situations where it comes up is fascinating. It goes way beyond simple network analysis. And I say simple network analysis in quotation marks because there's nothing simple about it. But, it's just more than just looking at the wire and seeing why, I don't know, this congestion window doesn't work.
Yeah.
I would love to see another 25 years, to be quite honest.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. The great thing about Wireshark, it's almost magical, is the fact that it lets you so directly cut through all the layers of abstraction that have built up over the last few decades on all the systems that we use, whether it's networking or, your USB or Bluetooth stack or your, or whatever you might be looking at that moves data back and forth. People have adapted Wireshark to, look at that data because they need to do that, to be able to troubleshoot things to visualize and see, how what that data is doing and where it's going.
Yeah, it's basically, it moved a little bit from being just a network oscilloscope to a general data stream oscilloscope. Pretty much everything you can dump through a PCAP file format, you can look at.
Yeah.
As I said, Bluetooth is a huge thing. I know of quite a few companies, even in Austria, who do Bluetooth analysis with Wireshark, because it's one of the only tools out there who actually lets you see the handshake of a Bluetooth connection. USB, there is a guy, he's on our team, Thomas Mann, who does USB PCAP, and he pretty much does only that. We have one core developer who does DVB, terrestrial and satellite and cable TV analysis. So yeah, it's pretty much an oscilloscope for anything that data streams.
Yeah.
And I kind of liked it. I kind of love being part of that. And from my personal view, I hope for 25 years. I hope for much more than that. I hope that this project stays on. I hope we can stay on the project as long as we can. Thank you very much, Gerald, for that ride we gained, for that weekend project that got way out of hand, which we all really, really enjoy participating. And thank you for creating such a wonderful thing that actually literally helping pretty much creating a industry. It's packet analysis was an expensive thing to do back then. It's a very cheap entry point now, and a very high quality cheap entry point. My favorite story is the packet mon from Microsoft has been canceled, and it was mentioned in the press release for that they should use Wireshark instead. So yeah, there's no better praise than that. Congrats to the foundation.
Well, thank you.
As a closing argument, what are you wishing for?
I'm wishing for the initial set of the foundation to settle down a little bit. We're still in the startup phase and figuring out our different workflows and how to get that up and running smoothly. But so far it's going well. I'm hoping to see everyone in Singapore in a couple of weeks and San Diego and a couple of months, and then Brussels later this year.
I think it hasn't been officially announced, but I think it's Brussels. Yes.
Yeah.
It's gonna be a lot of beer. Beer and chocolate. Oh, where will the motivation go?
Yep. But yeah, I get, one of the great things about the project is that it's there are always pleasant surprises. People are always contributing cool and interesting functionality, and I can't wait to see what comes down the line. That people bring on board.
Well, with that, thank you very much for listening to another episode about the Wireshark Foundation. If you want to know more about it, there is a website set up at wireshackfoundation.org, I think is the right address. We're going to put it in the show notes, as well as the wireshark.org website, where you will find information about donation and sponsorship. And also, I would like to let you check out our SharkFest website, sharkfest.wireshark.org, which will take you to our initial SharkFest conferences we host throughout the year. As I said, the next one is going to be in middle of April in Asia, in Singapore. And after that, we are at the beginning of June in San Diego, California. Thank you very much. Thank you, Gerald.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure having you. And until the next time.
Thank you for listening to this installment of the SharkBytes podcast. If you want to stay informed about upcoming episodes, please subscribe to our podcast at YouTube or your podcasting platform of choice. My name is Roland Klaal. See you next time.